We'd like to welcome David here today for our fellowship meeting. Take it away, David.
Okay. Hi, everyone. My name is David, and I'm an emotional compulsive overeater. I've been attending OA meetings since August of 2020, and my abstinent date is September 21st, 2020. But my current weight loss journey began back in February of 2019. In the last 3 years, I have reduced my weight by 314 pounds, which seems miraculous, and it is from a certain point of view. Big numbers impress people when they are good numbers. And because some people don't believe you unless you show them evidence, let me share two pictures with all of you. So, wave of the magic button. On the left there is me in June of 2018 at my maximum weight. On the right is me at my 1 year anniversary of abstinence. That's the same me, same hat, but a 278 pound difference. So there you go. Okay. So let me say that I know that my story is not most people's stories when it comes to compulsive eating. Many people in OA want to lose weight, but the difference between them and me is that when I reach my goal weight, and I am certain that I will reach it, but when I do, I will have lost a total of 588 pounds because the doctors say that I'm supposed to weigh 200 pounds. Losing 588 pounds is the equivalent of losing three people my height. Now, I say that to try and give you a glimpse into my perspective. Even in the 100-pounder meetings, I have yet to meet a person who has been as large as I was, and rarely do I meet someone who is as large as I still am. Now, I don't think that this makes me special. If anything, I consider it an important reason that I speak up about my journey, about how my life was unmanageable when I was powerless over food. I was invited here today to share my thoughts about the OA Fellowship, how the connections we make in these meetings lead to a better way of living, one that is healthier, happier, and more productive. At least that's what I wanted, and I can only speak to my goals and my experiences. In these rooms, you will find common ground with people because we know you. That's what it says in Welcome Home. We know you in OA because we are you. Of course, when you first show up, we don't know your name or the details of your life, and no one is ever going to force you to talk about anything that you don't want to talk about, not even those scary sponsors. When we say that we know you, we mean that we know the sorrow, the frustration, the fear that comes from having a food addiction. We have felt those same compulsive thoughts that you have felt, and we've carried out those harmful, destructive behaviors that have so much shame attached to them. If you want the better way of living that we have, then you need to understand from the start, no one can give that to you except you by working your program. We can't make you do something you don't want to do, which is why the work, the getting better, begins with willingness. I think it's fair to say that most of us came to our first OA meeting because we felt powerless, lost, and were in pain. Maybe some of you listening right now are new and you feel that way. You have this cloud of doom settled over your heart and mind. You think you've tried everything, that you're a mistake and not worthy of being happy. Maybe some of you have been around for a while and you're still struggling. There's something insidious and acidic about addiction, whether it's drugs, sex, alcohol, food, or any other addiction you can think of. They all hurt you and make you feel ashamed. It's a hard, cruel impact when you hit rock bottom. I know, I've been there, and so has everyone in this room who's working their program. I think that feeling like we never have answers or know for certain what to do next is a very human default setting that we all must contend with. And maybe that's why shame is like a serpent that constricts around us. Shame is so dangerous because when we listen to shameful thoughts in our heads, then we end up telling ourselves over and over statements like, I'm a mistake and there's nothing I can do about it. The fellowship is here to call bullshit on that lie. And it is a lie. It is a lie that your addiction tells you to keep you feeling powerless and miserable. Dishaw Hockett had a great way of explaining shame. He said, quote, one of the biggest biases we engage in is self-shaming. And if we are honest, sometimes we intentionally and unintentionally shame others. As long as we continue to do that, human beings will never feel the motivation that they need to do the self-change work or the broader societal change work that we need to do. End quote. When I read that, I thought, yeah, if I don't stop self-shaming, then I'm never going to get healthy. And if that's not clear enough, let me elaborate further. The only way to make my goals a reality is to do the internal work that I need to make the external changes that I want. It takes courage to work on yourself and change your life for the better. That's why we're always asking for courage in the Serenity Prayer. People ask me where they can find courage, or sometimes they just ask, how do you find courage, David? And I tell them that I find courage in the seeking, in searching inside myself through my self-examinations while relying on my higher power to guide me through my intuition. There are external forces out here in the real world that we sometimes have to contend with. But what's going on out here is nothing compared to what goes on in here. In here is the addiction and every mistake I have ever made. All my inner demons aligned against me. And in confronting those demons with a fearless and loving honesty, you better believe you'll find courage. But if you're not ready to face your inner demons, that's okay. Just being here at a meeting is the start of your recovery, because now you are among the fellowship and you need to start making connections in these rooms. That's why outreach is one of the most important things that you can do. I contact people outside of meetings via text messages, Marco Polos. I even write letters and mail them the old-fashioned way because I happen to get a kick out of it. I also make phone calls, but I do daily outreach because part of my amends to myself was to actively combat the loneliness that became the default mood of my days and nights. To be honest, in my experience, friends who are not part of the fellowship only provide so much sympathy. And even then, they never fully understand what I'm feeling and why. This is not to discount relationships or friendships that we have with people outside a program, especially because those are the interactions that I long for the most. I mean only to say that within the fellowship, there is more often an acknowledgement that signals comprehension rather than just that sympathetic shrug that I find to be frustratingly non-helpful and usually seems to signal that the other person doesn't know what to say or how to help. And that sometimes creates discomfort, which can drive friends away and lead to hurt feelings. So I schedule outreach into my action plan each day to help fill up the hours and to stay positive. There is, of course, times when outreach causes hard feelings, And there are also times when outreach goes unanswered. When the night comes and the loneliness joins with the silence to lay siege to my mind, I remember the poem at the start of my journal that says, "When anxious, uneasy, and bad thoughts come, I go to OA, and people there drown them out with their acceptance and impose a rhythm upon everything in me that is bewildered and confused." Usually after I read that, I go to an OA meeting based out of Europe. Oh, they are getting to know me pretty well on that side of the pond, and I get to stave off tears and fear for one more hour. My point is, it doesn't matter if outreach goes unanswered. What matters is that I deal with what I'm feeling in ways that do not involve eating food. That's what getting through the night means to me. Before OA, before I had a means to rely on the higher power of my choosing, my life was miserable, dominated by fear, shame, feelings of depression, and worthlessness. I used the food like a drug to treat a sickness of my spirit, of my emotions, and that's why I identify myself as an emotional compulsive overeater. My addiction set me apart, keeping me from being able to participate in so many things because I couldn't do many of those things that most people take for granted. For example, for a long time, I did not fit in any seat with armrests, and most seats might not have been able to support my weight. So I have been excluded from pretty much any social activity you can think of that occurs in public places. I couldn't go to the movies, eat at a restaurant, or fit in almost every car that people drive. My life was the social equivalent of solitary confinement long before COVID came along. So I know it's important to share my story, either here in the rooms, or on my podcast, or in the memoir I hope to publish one day, because when you've been through what I've been through, when you have been morbidly obese your entire adult life and climbed as high on the scale as 788 pounds, you are not seen or treated as a human being. Right now, I weigh 474 pounds, and there are still a lot of people who fail to acknowledge me with common courtesy. And by that, I mean that they don't look me in the eye when they're talking to me. No one touches me. No one hugs me. But I'm not discouraged. As a result of my healthy eating and consistent moderate amounts of exercise, my blood pressure, my cholesterol, well, all of my blood work in general is as perfect as it can be. Those are my doctor's words. I sleep so much better now than I did at my maximum weight. I'm productive with my time when it comes to my job, socializing with friends, and my own writing. I have hope again. I have purpose, confidence, and I feel like my smile shines a whole lot brighter now because I have altered my way of thinking and seeing myself. During my time in program, I've developed my own personal set of rules to help me live my life and honor the amends that I made to myself and to the people I care about. My rules also help me deal with the challenges that life brings, and many of the rules were inspired by interactions with the fellowship. Keep coming to meetings and you'll pick up tips, tricks, little sayings, as well as acronyms that are very helpful. But you'll also be challenged by the fellowship. There are people I have met in these rooms who have said and done things that offended me and pushed my buttons. None of us are perfect. When it comes to the fellowship, do I have to accept everyone all the time? In a meeting, yes. Outside of a meeting, no. There are people in our program who are very sick in many different ways, and they are very capable of inflicting harm. So I do not have to allow anyone to bring large amounts of stress into my life and harm me. I have a responsibility to protect myself and my health, even if that means I have to walk away from certain meetings and certain service positions, because I have a duty to take care of myself first. I do not have to submit myself to anyone's cruelty, no matter the reason for why they behave that way. I am not anyone's punching bag. Being a punching bag is an aspect of people pleasing and one of the things that drove me to my maximum weight. So when interactions come that are potential threats to my recovery, I pray to God for protection and guidance to help me be a good man and say the right things so that I can give the acceptance that is so essential in these rooms. And I do say the sick person's prayer, and there is no doubt in my mind that there are people out there who say that prayer for me as well, because that's how it's supposed to work. The fellowship will challenge you, test you, make you feel like you could scream until your lungs are empty and then keep on screaming. You will cry, perhaps many tears during your time in OA, but none of those tears and the pain you will experience as you work your program will be wasted. Not if you are willing to look inside yourself honestly and fearlessly. Because while this part of the fellowship over here is challenging you, this part over here is accepting you, listening to you, and encouraging you to be brave, to embrace the courage to change the things that you can. Courage is found in the seeking and in believing in yourself and in others. When it comes to who we really are in our minds and in our souls, we can always get better. I can't change everything out here in the physical world. I can't change other people or the weather. I can't change my face or my age. But those are arbitrary things that do not define me, not the person I am, not that extra something that generates my personality, my humor, my hopes, and my dreams. Yeah, 99.9% of the people in the world will never know the real me or comprehend anything about me beyond the momentary glance they give me when I'm in their line of sight. And I'm good with that, because what matters is how I see myself, how I treat myself, and how I live my life. My journey is not complete, but I know I will continue to advance to that journey's end, to that healthy body weight. I have that psychic change that the big book of AA talks about. I honor my amends to myself, and I have the tools to keep living a healthy lifestyle that is free from the insanity of despair and depression that ruled so much of my life for so far too long. I go to meetings. I pray and meditate every day. I do mirror work to start my day with positive thinking and positive energy. I give service by running a journal writing meeting. I work with sponsees, and I honor anonymity. My sponsor told me that anonymity as a recovery tool means being my authentic self and offering the hand of service to others. I am being me. I am a friend. I'm a writer. I'm a teacher. I am laughter and a smile. I am courage overcoming fear. Bravery and kindness overcoming self-doubt and shame. I'm a doer, not a hider. I have hope and confidence. I am being David. I am a tiger, fierce, determined. I have strength in my body despite my bulk and size. And I am worthy of living a life of joy and health. Thank you for letting me share.